Hello, homemakers. Welcome to the Art of Home podcast, where we are exploring how homemakers cultivate a place to belong. I'm your host, Allison Weeks. I'm a wife. I'm a mom to four grown kids. I'm a granny to one little boy and one baby girl arriving soon. And I have been practicing the art of home for over 30 years. I'm excited to bring you another seasoned homemaker portrait today. Here on the Art of Home, we have seasoned portraits. That's 25 years experience or more. In the trenches portraits, that is more than five, but less than 25 years experience. And newbie portraits, those homemakers who have less than 5 years experience. We also have our topical deep dive episodes where we cover everything from sewing to canning to organizing to identity in Christ and setting our values and our priorities. And coming soon next season, we will be talking about the third pillar of homemaking, setting our rhythms and routines as homemakers. Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about today's episode in just a few minutes. But first, it's time for Allison's update. This is the part of the podcast where I tell you what is happening in my home and what homemaking resources I'm loving lately. This update is brought to you by listeners who support the Art of Home through Buy Me a Coffee. Buy Me a Coffee is a virtual tip jar where you can show your appreciation and support for the show by giving a one-time tip or by becoming a Titus II Woman supporter and setting up a recurring tip of $5 per month. Titus II Women supporters receive access to a weekly audio version of our free newsletter, Homemaker Happy Mail. And whichever way you choose to give, I am grateful for your support. I mentioned in last week's newsletter that we have been doing some spring cleaning at my house and decluttering and just basically creating some physical margin in our spaces as we head into what's going to be a very busy spring season for our family. Spring cleaning, or any cleaning for that matter, goes a lot faster when you have the right tools. Glass and surface cleaning solutions, a good broom, a steam mop, cleaning cloths, and a vacuum are about all that you really need to do most cleaning jobs. We know these tools make a big difference in our cleaning routine, but how often have you considered the need to care for your cleaning tools? This is something that sounds good in theory. I know I should do it, but somehow I always find other things to do. That is, until my vacuum cleaner quits working in the middle of a major cleaning session, and that is exactly what happened. The filter was clogged with months worth of dust, and the beater was hopelessly tangled with hair and fibers. The whole machine needed to be cleaned, including rinsing the filters with water, which takes 24 hours to dry. So, no more vacuum, and I had to finish the job with my broom and dustpan, taking twice as long. Ugh, this frustrating situation would likely have been avoided if I had taken the time to clean my vacuum every couple of months. Vacuums aren't the only machines needing regular TLC. Think of all of the hardworking, time-saving appliances we employ as modern homemakers. Dishwashers, clothes washers and dryers, irons, ovens, refrigerators, garbage disposals, mixers, microwaves, vehicles, and more. All need regular cleaning and maintenance to keep them performing at their best for as long as possible. If done on a regular schedule, appliance maintenance will cost you very little time and will save you from premature, very costly replacements. I will be talking more about maintaining appliances in this week's newsletter, so be sure to sign up for our mailing list at theartofhomepodcast.com/subscribe. Now on to today's episode. I am talking with seasoned homemaker Leanne Stadler about her experience of keeping a home for 27 years. Leanne and her husband, Eric, have 6 children, and they have fostered over 40 children in their home. In her homemaking journey, Leanne has navigated her children's special needs, her own chronic illness, adopting 2 foster kids, and the recent loss of her 23-year-old son. Through it all, God has shown Leanne his faithfulness. She says, "Sometimes he is very quiet, but I know he is still there because he has never failed me." The Stadler family has recently launched a small elderberry farm called Titus Grove in north central Ohio. They are founded on faith and desire to bring glory to God in all they do. You can follow along on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube as they learn the ins and outs, victories and defeats, and all that is to come on The Grove. I will link all the places that you can connect with Leanne in the show notes, so be sure to go check that out. I just want to thank you for trusting me with some of your valuable time today. I pray that this next hour will encourage and inspire you in your practice of the art of home. You are doing good work, homemaker. No matter how messy your day has been, God sees, and He is pleased with your commitment to serve your home and family for His glory. Whatever you are applying your hands to as you listen today, I know you will enjoy Leanne's story of home. Welcome to The Art of Home. I'm here with my new friend, Leanne Stadler. She is a seasoned homemaker. We're going to hear all about her story of home. But before we get into that story, why don't you just say hi, Leanne, and introduce yourself to the audience. Tell us a little bit about who you are today.
Hi, I am so glad to be here. My name, well, you said Leanne, and I am the wife of Eric for 27 years. I am, well, I like to say, the mom of many, but technically six kiddos that range in the ages of would be 25 and 4 years old. We homeschool, we have a farm, an elderberry farm, and we just live life in the middle of nowhere amongst the Amish. And
oh,
yeah.
Cool.
So that's where we're at.
Okay. Awesome. Okay, so I know we're going to get all into all the things about your farm and your many kids and your life with Eric. So let's go back to the beginning. So when did you first become a homemaker? And when you did you have any skills?
So I was blessed to have a mom that was technically a homemaker, and she did teach us things. So when I got married in 1996, I did take along the skills that she had worked with us, with her kids with. So I could cook, I could clean, I could decorate and do all the things. And so that was a blessing.
Let's talk about what you struggled with. So what skill did you have, or skills did you have steep learning curves for, and how did you kind of work through that and overcome those?
Believe it or not, housekeeping. But it was more so housekeeping and scheduling out how to constantly do things. You know, I'm not going to lie, the first probably, gosh, 2 or 3 months of us being married, I did not really do the laundry. And I remember my mother coming over one day, and I was a young bride, and my mother coming over one day, she's like, Leanne, we're taking all of this to the laundromat. And we stayed at the laundromat for like, and we took up like 3 or 4 and did load after, I think I had like 10 loads of laundry that day, and there's only 2 of us. And, but it was just one of those things where I would start a load and I'd just go do something else. And I did work. Mm-hmm. I did work at, when we first got married, I did work full time. So trying to schedule everything and keep the house clean, I just could not grasp that. I knew how to clean, but how to actually schedule it out and make it work, I did not gather. I could not do it.
I do think that's a huge learning curve. It was for me, and I think it is for a lot of ladies, and we get sort of stuck in that overwhelm of I know how to do things, but there's so much to do. Like, when do I do it all?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm curious that she took you to the laundromat. Is that because you had so much, or did you not have a washer and dryer?
Washer and dryer. But yeah, I just had so much. And just to be totally open, my husband, when we first got together and started dating, he was the kind of guy that, well, he didn't care to do laundry, and he worked full time. And it was, so he would just go buy new outfits. So, so I actually married into laundry is what I tell people, and I wasn't capable of doing it. So yeah, we just had so much. My mother's like, we're going to the laundromat. So
yeah, it is actually, it's kind of a pain. I had to do the laundromat for quite a few years when we were first married, and it's sort of a pain because you got to get in the car, go to the laundromat, but it's kind of nice because you get it all done in one go.
Yes. Yeah. And it's folded. Cause I think that is the hardest thing. Like, washing and drying is okay. Folding's another thing.
Yeah. For a while there, we did a lot of our just go get it out of the laundry basket.
Yes.
And put it on your body. We got better. We got better though. Okay. Well, let's talk about expectations. So did you have any expectations going into being a homemaker, being married? And if so, did it match up with what actually happened?
I don't. Did I have, I think expectations in the sense of, you know, that dream life, you know, the white picket fence life. I did have those expectations. We had some great premarital counseling, which I highly recommend to anyone, with a good godly minister. And they helped us put things on track in a sense, but then you get in the day in and the day out of being married. And I lived with my parents until we got married. So to be with a whole different person, their personality, my personality, his personality, I should say, my personality. He was an only child. I was one of five. So yeah, a lot of things the first 2 years were hard, very hard, very hard to, in regards to figuring each other out more, in regards to figuring out we were remodeling and purchased our first home. We were in the middle of DIY in our house. And so yeah, it wasn't the white picket fence in any way, shape, or form. It wasn't the cute little gardens sitting on, you know, I still don't have those cute little gardens, but I do have a picket fence. But yeah, so yeah, it just wasn't, I don't know. It was good, but it was hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how about as things went on, you know, and you started making adjustments and then kids started coming into the picture, and what are some of the practical things that you did to manage your household? What kind of things worked well? What sort of things did not work well?
So I very quickly learned to keep a planner. And now I will say I've went through several different types of planners throughout the 27 years because they don't all fit perfectly. Maybe I should do that, make one of these days. But because there's always something missing from one of them. But I quickly learned to use a planner and definitely plan out my days. When kiddos started coming in, our oldest had ridiculous allergies. So then it became, you know, I had to make sure the dust was away. I had to get rid of house plants, and, you know, we couldn't have the animals in the house. And so you had to maintain the house a lot better, or he would be very sick. Yeah. So that forces you to make some changes. So, and by the time the children came along, I was also just a stay-at-home mom. I'm not going to say just, but I was not working. My husband learned, and I learned to divvy out tasks, because, you know, taking care of the kids is within itself is its own thing. But, you know, he actually started taking over the laundry. Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. He is very I don't even know how, methodical, I guess. Maybe he's very good at keeping on task. And even if he has to set a timer, where I'm just like, la, 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 la. But he's not like that. And so he took over the laundry. Thank you, Jesus. To this day, he still does laundry. And it's such a blessing. But yeah, scheduling. I can't say enough about scheduling out your day. And then there were things that I had to learn to put aside. Because you just can't fit it all in. And I could pick them up later in other seasons of life. But at that moment, the focus was on parenting and my marriage and taking care of my house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a hard lesson to learn, I think, for a lot of us. To learn what we say no to in this season. Because it feels like, oh, but I want to do this thing. And you think you're going to have diapers, kids in diapers forever.
I think I have.
And you're never going to get out of that season. Like, this is never going to be over, and I'm never going to, but it's not really, that's not
and
true
it goes
at all.
So fast. Mm-hmm. So very fast.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some special challenges, which you've got several, I would think, based on your bio that I read. And I'm just going to let you kind of touch on what is on your heart to share, you know, just things that you faced in your homemaking journey that the Lord really, really brought you down to teach you some hard lessons. And then just what have you learned through that?
Yeah. So a couple things. I had difficult pregnancies, so I was on bed rest with those things. So you have to change life thought processes then. And you actually had to allow people to help you which I was not, I could do it all myself. I was great. I can do everything I wanted to, even though my mother had to come help me take the clothes to the laundromat. It doesn't matter. I could still do it, right? So with difficult pregnancies, I did have to accept help. So that was a learning curve. The Lord had to humble me and say, no, you do not have it all together. And he was in control. And so difficult pregnancies came along, and then a chronic illness came along that I had had my whole life. It is a connective tissue disorder, and but it was not diagnosed until later in life. It's referred to as Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and it affects all your joints and anything where you have collagen in your system. So I began having heart problems. I had to have heart surgery. I've had multiple joints taken care of and, you know, fixed again. That was very hard. One of the things that I learned during, I had a 2-year process where I had surgery and had to have my foot reconstructed after a fall. And then I had to have my shoulder reconstructed from the same fall. And one of the things that I cried. I'm like, I can't do anything. I couldn't even use the restroom by myself. Right. So that's very, very humbling. And you cry. I cried. And then I remember sitting in a shoe store because I had to have special shoes. And anyone who knew me beforehand, I love shoes. I love shoes. And I loved to hunt for that great deal on a pair of shoes. And I was taken down to wearing what basically looked like nurse's shoes. And that within itself was humbling. And I sat in that shoe store and I cried over shoes. But in that, I met a young lady, an older woman, and she said, this is just a time for you to be still. It's time for you to be still. And it's time for you to wait on the Lord and listen to him. And I'm just like, well, I never thought of that. She's like, think about it. You can just sit on the couch and hold one of your kids. You don't have to get up and do the laundry. You can just sit and hold them and talk to them, sing to them, you know. And that was a totally different perspective on that, because I was like, well, I got to make the dinner and I'm supposed to be doing this and I can't clean my house. And it was time to just be still. And that I needed, but I didn't know I needed it. So that was just a blessing in disguise. And I'm still learning to deal with it, because there are days that I'll go really hard and I can't do much the next day. And that's okay. I get some things done and then I just get to sit and enjoy the kids or, play a board game or something. So that's good.
Yeah. Oh gosh. How old were your kids when you got this diagnosis?
So, oh my gosh, it was when we first moved to this farm. And so it's been about 12 years. So they were older. But there were some extra kiddos as...
Right, yeah. Right, because you guys fostered. So we'll talk about that in a minute. But what a great lesson that God taught you in that. That I think there's a lesson there for all of us, that we all need times of rest, and we're going to be talking this year about rhythms, about the third pillar of homemaking, which is rhythms and routines, and that need to have healthy rhythms, which include regular times of rest. And for homemakers, I always say I think it's extra hard for us because our work is where we live.
Correct. You don't get away from it.
You never get away from your job. And it's so tempting to just, let me just do one more load of laundry, or let me just wash these dishes real quick or whatever, instead of just sitting and resting. So that's a real good blessing. So, okay. Any other struggles, special needs?
Well, we do have 2 kiddos that are special needs, medically complex. Yeah. And so that has been a new challenge in where there were times, well, like, for instance, we're in a season right now where I'm at a hospital that's an hour and a half away every week with one of the kiddos. So that you have to adjust, because it's an hour and a half away plus the hour or two that you're there, and then the hour. So you lose an entire day. So that whole scheduling thing, you have to remember then everything has to adjust for the week ahead, because when I get back home, especially with my order, driving is very exhausting. So I'll get home and I'm pretty much done for the day.
Oh, just the sitting, and is that it's hard on your joints?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
yeah, gosh.
It's really exhausting.
Do you, so you still have kids at home or?
Yes, believe it or not, all of my children are still at home, except for one. And so it, yeah, luckily we are blessed in that aspect. Our oldest daughter is 23. She does work, but she's a huge help. And then so are all the other kiddos.
Okay. And are you fostering anybody right now?
Yes. Or? So we currently, thank you, Jesus. We, on the 21st of February at the time of this, I think we're 13 days away at the time of this recording, we will be actually adopting her. She's been with us for, yes. So she'd been with us for 4 years. We got her when she was 3 days old. And at the NICU, we stayed with her in the NICU. And it's been a battle, but she is amazing. And she will be a forever Stadler. And then,
oh yeah. My goodness. Congratulations. Thanks. That's exciting. So well, let's talk about your fostering experience a little bit, because the next thing we talk about is bringing kids, inviting kids into homemaking with
yes.
you. And you have been blessed with biological children, but then you've also been a fosterer for a lot of children.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So my parents were foster parents. Okay. And so I knew about it. And they stopped fostering when we got married, when Eric and I got married. But I also had seen their side of things where I was like, I don't think I want to ever do that. And then my husband came to me and he's like, hey, do you think maybe we should look at this? And I'm like, no, I never said I would do. I said I would never do that. And then we prayed about it. It took us about 2 years to finally decide, because it affects your own children, as I knew firsthand. And so then we decided to. So about 10 years ago, we started foster parenting. We've had about 40 children come through our home. We have adopted, well, it'll be two this month. The one little guy was a victim of shaken baby syndrome. He had been starved and shaken. And at 2 months old, when he came to us, he weighed just over 7 pounds. And there is a story floating around the internet somewhere about him, but he's been a blessing and God has worked miracles through him. He was not expected to live, much less walk and talk. And he does have delays, but he's doing great. He's doing really well. So, but yeah, it's been a blessing having the kiddos. It's been very hard. It is very heartbreaking. But there are so many kids out there that just need home. And they don't get that other places.
How did you prepare your kids to become a foster family?
Yes, so we did discuss it with our children first and foremost. We also, anytime we do get a call, we discuss it with our children, and everybody has to pretty much be on board, you know. And when you're dealing with different ages, sometimes it could be, well, I just don't want to share my room this time around, and then you got to go, okay, listen. Let's talk about this, you know. But overall, the kids have always been involved. Like I said, my parents had been foster parents. They had adopted children out of that foster homes, out of the foster system. So my kids understood some of it. And my kids have always had, I've just been so blessed with the fact that they've always had servant hearts. And so for them, it was, you know, just they want to help everybody, every kid they can find. They'll be like, well, what about that kid? No, you know, especially when they were little. But it's just been, you know, you just had, let me see how to say this. It is a completely different life than the way our children were raised, the children that come into our home. So they have seen things that actually have changed their hearts even. To where they can see that, you know, where the Lord has allowed them to have certain lifestyles and certain things and the way their parents are compared to where some of the other's kids are, or where they're coming from. It's just their hearts changed so much in that. And where I was more afraid of them becoming angry with us or feeling jealous, I've not really ever seen that with our kiddos. Now, don't get me wrong. When a child takes your favorite Barbie doll and cuts its hair off, you do have problems. You know what I mean? Your kid gets upset. We did have a teenager that kicked one of the dogs, and my, you know, there are things like that that happen, and it's not perfect. But I'm blessed that my kids have never really said no to bringing in any other child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds like it's really grown a heart of compassion in your children.
Absolutely. to the point where honestly, all of my, the ones that are all able to work are in some form of servant positions. So that's been a blessing. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about logistically having a lot of family members and, you know, it's very fluid because you've got kids coming in, kids going out. You know, how did you manage that day to day and how did you invite your children and your foster children to enter into the homemaking, the day to day stuff and all of that?
Yeah. So I think at one point we had 9 kiddos in the house at once. And yes, and with fostering too, there's not just, you don't just bring them into your home and take care of them. They have their needs and they have appointments and visitations and things. So it has been, you know, we have a schedule. Early on, we had what was called Stadler Command Central, right? So yeah. I made this big board and everybody had their things that they had to accomplish and do. So, and of course, it was according to age and stages. And a lot of the kiddos that we brought in, they have never had a chore in their life. And so a lot of times you have to work with that as well. And you just start with the basics. Hey, can you please take your plate to the table, from the table to the kitchen sink? You know, you're done eating, take your plate. So there were chores, which we don't take, most people refer to them as chores. We call them responsibilities at home. Because that it's your responsibility.
Like
yeah, it is your responsibility. Yeah. And then also, you know, all of my kids can cook, all of our bios can cook, which is great.
Good.
They've always been in the, I've always allowed them in the kitchen. So that's been help. And it's been interesting to, you know, we've tried to teach all of our kiddos every aspect of the homemaking in a sense. Even our boys know how to do laundry, you know, obviously my husband does it. So, you know, I think the hardest thing we have is getting them to clean their bathrooms. It's for whatever reason, I always wind up having to clean all the bathrooms. But but you know what? I actually enjoy it. It's really odd, one of those things. But no, I think just it doesn't always have to be, hey, go clean your room. It's we're going in, let's go in, oh, look at your room. Let's put this away. Hey, why don't you grab a bag of garbage, a bag, and start putting all your garbage in. The little ones, I love to hand them a wipe, you know, a cleaning wipe. Go clean the handles of the doorknobs.
Oh, yeah.
You know, go wipe off the baby gates. And especially when you have this many littles coming in and out, the germs are ridiculous. Can you wipe the banisters down? You know, they love it. They love to spray down the windows and wipe them. Yes. Do I have to go back or my husband go back and do it after they're done? Absolutely. Because they're streaky. Right. But they're learning. So I think just in every aspect, we've always just allowed them. Sometimes it takes a little longer and I am not perfect. There are times I'm like, okay, I just need to get this done. Can you please go play with a toy or, you know, go play in the living room, go watch a TV show, go something. Just let me do this. But generally speaking, it's sure. Why don't you help me fold clothes? Why don't you help me this, that, or the other? So,
yeah. Yeah. Those are some great suggestions. I love that. And I love responsibilities, calling them responsibilities instead of chores. So I want to shift and talk about hospitality a little bit, because we show hospitality to outsiders, of course, but to one another within the home. And I believe that sharing the responsibilities of the house is one way to enter into hospitality with each other. But particularly in your situation with bringing in foster kids, what are some of the things that you guys did to facilitate hospitality within your home with your family members? How did you make those kids feel welcome and like they were a part?
Oh, wow. Yeah. So one of the things that when a child first comes into the home, it is, you know, you show them around, but we always ask them, well, what would you like? Let me back up, because a lot of times we just take in infants, but we've taken in 2, 3, 4, 18, 17, turning 18. And it's, you make them try and make them their favorite meal. And sometimes that's hard because it may not be what I would approve of on a regular basis. You know, like I'm not going to talk, but like the one little one likes those cheese filled hot dogs, you know? So you deal with that and you bring those in and you make them the meal that they want. But so then you try and make sure that they have a special place. Every child has to have a bed, but how about we go pick out a brand new blanket just for you? So that's always fun. And then they get to take those blankets if you know, if and when they get to return home or go to some other home. So that's a nice thing. You know, every kid is different, whether they're biological, foster. So you try and figure out what's best for them. You know, depending on their age too, they have their own little, we keep little bathroom kits, so toothbrush, toothpaste, you know, that's theirs. Pick your color, you know. Just try and make them feel welcome. And then we just kind of settle in to, is there something you want to watch on TV? You know, because a lot of them, that's what they have done mostly. So you try and make them feel like normal about that. That's
yeah,
okay. Like
this isn't a completely foreign environment.
Correct.
Because it's already going to feel very weird.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Those are great suggestions. Okay. So what about people outside of your family? What are some, like maybe one practical thing that you guys do or have done to show hospitality to people outside your family?
So one of the things, one of the big things are because we have so many caseworkers coming and going in the home. Every caseworker that has come into our home understands that this is a safe space for them as well. I know you're here to talk about the kiddos, but I also understand that what you see on a daily basis is unimaginable to most people. So if you need to just come in, and you may have scheduled an hour, but if you need to stay here for two and just talk, have a nice cup of coffee or something, you can do that. You're more than welcome, always. And as far as even other people outside of the home, like kids, we've tried to never say no when they say, hey, mom, can so-and-so come over? Can so-and-so come out to dinner with us? We try very hard to not say no. There are times we have to, of course. That's life. And then different, you know, in the different seasons of our lives too, we would do like community neighborhood parties in the backyard or barbecues or bonfires or those type of things to always let people just, we just always want people to feel welcome.
I love this, this idea of ministering to the caseworker. I wouldn't have even thought of that, you know, because you're right. I cannot imagine what they see. My sister-in-law did that kind of work for a while, and the stories are just horrific. So to give them that space in your home, what a great ministry. That's awesome. Well, let's talk about the seasons of homemaking a little bit. What was your most difficult transition from one season to another, and how did you cope with that?
Okay. Bear with me on this one. A few years ago, I probably would have told you that it was with my diagnosis and learning to handle that. I would have told you it was even up to about 2.5 years ago when I was diagnosed adult ADD. No wonder I couldn't keep things scheduled, right? Yeah. Figure things out and get distracted and leave the laundry sitting for days. I would have told you that was it. Up until 16 months ago, October 2nd, 2022, our son was 23 and was killed instantly. And that changes everything. You can't, I can function to an extent, but you're just stuck. You know, when your child is born, and if you're a God-fearing person, you dedicate that child to Christ. And you tell the Lord, Lord, I will do my best with this child to raise him up, to follow in your ways, as long as you have given him to me. But you never expect God to not let him be here or let your child be here for that long. You know, you have all these hopes and dreams. And anyhow, all those things change. And I think you can't, like I said, you can't function. My house did not get cleaned for months. You know, the basics. We didn't let the dishes pile up or the laundry. But all those things, you know, we have a small farm, and my son would garden with us, and he loved to be out there. And the day he died, he and I were out in the garden in the morning. I could not walk back in that garden for a year. And even I tried last year, you know, last spring to get things going, and I got things planted and I let it go after that. I just couldn't keep going back. And even now I'm facing having to get out there. And every time I walk down the stupid aisles with all the seeds and everything, it just makes me cry. But even though I have a house full of wonderful children and my husband, it just seems like everything is pointless. And so I struggle every day just to sometimes get out of bed. And I'm not mad. I'm not mad at God. Not at all. Because in our beliefs, everyone, it is appointed unto man, wants to die. And this just was his time. But to face the dishes, I couldn't cook for a while. My son was an amazing cook. He and I spent tons of time in the kitchen. He was a firefighter and a paramedic. And so he cooked for the fire departments and everybody loved some of his recipes. And so I was getting texts afterwards, and, hey, did you have the recipe from this? Well, my son never used recipes, so I didn't have any of his recipes. So I couldn't be in the kitchen. At first, when the meals started rolling in, I'm like, why did they plan out meals for 2 and 3 months? I was like, why? Well, guess what? I needed those meals to come in the house because I couldn't cook. I couldn't clean. Every day it was, Leanne, get up, shower, brush your teeth, and make sure the littles are functioning and doing what they need to do. So this has been the hardest. I'm still not there. I will be open and completely honest. Through counseling and things, we've been told, especially for a mother, it can take up to 2 years before you fully, not even fully, it's a new you that you have to find. It's your new rhythms and your new, just your new you. That person did not survive when my son passed away. And now we're finding in our entire family, what are we to do now? After about 13 months, I told myself, I said, I've got two beautiful little babies, little kiddos. And when their first, the Christmas after he passed in October, we had all the firsts right away, his first birthday without him, and Christmas and Thanksgiving and all this. The Christmas, I could not decorate. So I have these two little kids. So we brought in an outdoor lawn tree that was like neon lights. We sat it on a bookshelf, and the kids were like, okay. And I said, but I can't keep doing this. This isn't fair to them. And my son loved them dearly, and he wouldn't, not that I live my life for my son, but he would not have wanted them to miss out on things. And so, I did go to the doctor, and I talked with my doctor, and she's amazing. And we did have to go on something, not necessarily like an antidepressant, but it is a medication that actually helps you get motivated. It's hard to explain, but it makes you get up and do things. So it has been a couple months with that, and that has been a huge help. I'm not numb. I still cry every day. I still am dealing with that grief, but I'm also trying to learn how to be a homemaker again. And a mom. And it's just so different. It's so hard to explain unless you've been there. It's really just so hard. And I don't wish that on anybody.
Yeah.
It's hard to explain.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that, that journey that you're still in the middle of. And I imagine you can't understand it unless you walk that road. I'm glad that you mentioned counseling and medication. I've talked about that on the show before in different contexts, not dealing with grief, but well, a different kind of grief, but there is a place for that, you know, and we need to be careful about saying, oh, no medication, that's bad, you know, as if like you're not having enough faith. That's a common, you know, argument against medication is, well, if you just have more faith, then you shouldn't need to be on medication. But no, it's a tool that God has given us.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why I think he's given the doctors such an amazing ability to help us. You know, that's the gift that he gave them. Why? And we need to allow that gift to be given back to us in a form. Now, I'm not going to lie, I'm a bit of a scrunchie. So I try not to do too many medications. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not crunchy, as my kids say. But
you're a scrunchie?
That's what my daughter says. You're scrunchy, Mom. You're a little, like, I'm a little bit, I am very big into the non-toxic and those type of things. And I'm into more natural homeopathic things. I mean, we have an elderberry farm, right? And
right, exactly.
So, but I still like my Dr. Pepper, which is a bad habit. And I still like a chocolate bar. And it is life.
So you're scrunchy.
I'm scrunchy.
Yeah. I like that. That's a great, I'm going to start using that term. Scrunchy.
I'm scrunchy.
Well, so you mentioned that you feel like you're having to learn how to be a homemaker again. You're having to learn how to be this new version of yourself, this different version without your son. So what does that look like? What's God teaching you in the season that you're in now? What does your homemaking look like? How are you challenging yourself and growing?
Yeah. Wow. I don't quite have a full answer for that yet because I am still smack in the middle of it. And that resting is still a huge aspect because it is very easy to get overwhelmed. And dealing with grief, it affects every, I was floored with some of the things. I mean, I went 10 weeks with this whole body rash that turned out to be like some sort of a mast cell reaction from the stress. And so, you know, your brain fog so is huge with grief. And so I can set out to do something and totally forget about it. Yesterday, matter of fact, I made a slew of pancakes. Was that yesterday? No, the day before. See, I made a slew of pancakes and I put them up in the microwave for anyone else who wanted to take a couple. And I figured, well, I'll just freeze the rest of them. Went back to the microwave yesterday. They're still in there. I was like, oh my gosh. So I totally forgot about them. And I just wasted all those pancakes, right? So I'm still trying to, like I said, the medication has been a huge help recently. Took a little while to kick in. And then, of course, it kicked in and then I got the flu. So, you know, the flu takes you down for a while. So with this new help, I'm still really just fresh into that. But scheduling, I still am very dependent on my planner. I am unbelievably stuck on my planner because if I don't write it down right now, I forget everything. I am, okay, still, there are things that I just let go. My baseboards probably have not been cleaned in 16 months. I'm not going to lie. There's things that I have to make sure to do every day, above and beyond taking my shower and brushing my teeth now at this point. But, you know, the Lord just, he's still shown that he's been faithful through all of this. I still get to wake up every morning and see my beautiful children. I still get to take care of the home, even though I maybe don't want to that day. I still have those blessings and sometimes he's still very quiet, but I know he's still there because he's never failed me. And, you know, we lead worship services every couple of months and, so I've been able to, it took me a while to be able to even worship in that way. But he's really been ministering to me in many of the songs now. I just play music all day long as much as I can. So that's been a blessing things have been able to speak to me. And the different people that he's brought into our life this season compared to the ones that you would have thought would have been there have not been. And there are new people that the Lord has blessed us with. And some have lost children themselves and some just can't imagine that loss and want to be right by your side. One of the things that we refer to, we are very much involved with, it's called While We're Waiting. And it's all parents who've lost children. And it is a biblical based, we do a Zoom and then you can do local groups. But one of the things that her name's Nan Deal, and I've told tell anybody she said it's fine. We talk about is having your grief garden and allowing only you only want people in there. You don't want someone in there that's going to trample your garden. You want someone in there that's going to help you nurture your garden. And so it's been a God bringing new people, removing the other ones that have tried to trample. Honestly, people do that. And showing you the relationships and the things you were doing beforehand aren't that important anymore. The baseboards are not as important as spending time trying to laugh with my littles. You know, going for a drive with my new driver and praying the whole time. You know, those kind of things are more important than the baseboards. They'll get done. It's more important, you know, than whether or not I didn't get my garlic bulbs put in the ground this fall, you know, but just stopping and realizing what is important. God has really been working with us on that.
What would you say is the one impactful thing that someone has done for you in this process? Because I'm just thinking of the listener who wants to minister to someone they know who is in the middle of grief. What's maybe something memorable, something that someone did for you during this grieving process that you think this was a really great thing, and I would recommend this to others to do?
Yeah. So I have one friend who we've always been acquaintances, you know, through homeschool co-op and those type of things. And she just started reaching out to me. And one of the things that a lot of people are afraid to do are just to even talk to you about your child that's went on. They're afraid they're going to upset you. Listen, I cry every day. Say his name. It's okay. I want to make sure I want him to be remembered, right? I want to know that he was loved. So what she would do is pretty much every couple of days, she would just message me. And she would ask the hard questions. What do you miss most about him? You know, or what do you think he's doing in heaven today? Things that are really hard to think about. But she was with me in that. And she still does it, you know, 16 months out. And if she misses a couple of days, she's like, I'm so sorry. It's okay. It's okay. But it was questions like, you know, I know you miss his hugs today. And I'm praying for you. You know, what would it, do you think, you know, he would want to cook for you today? You know, just to help you not forget. And there were people who would come in and say things like, oh, you know, oh, he's in a better place. And I know this, you know, for me, the one thing that did not sit well was, cause I'm going to be honest with you, that did not sit well is people saying, well, God knows what you're feeling. Okay. Yes. I know this. Right. And then they would say, well, don't forget he lost his son too. And I know this. And then my response, because early on I could be a bit snippy, was, I understand that. And I know God knows what we're going through. But guess what? In 3 days, his son rose again from the dead. And guess where he's sitting right now? By his father. My son is sitting there with them. And I don't get to see him. And so that really did irritate me. And I know some people it doesn't. And no one really knows what to say. But just saying their name, asking questions, even just sending it. I had someone send me a song, one of his buddies from the fire department, you know, sending pictures that they may have had that I didn't know existed. Those things are all, they're just treasures. So,
I think people are maybe afraid to bring him up, you know, talk about the person who has passed away, because we don't want to hurt you by, you know, reminding you.
Right.
But it sounds like what you're saying is, no, I need to remember that he's very real. He's not here.
Yes.
He lived this life here and, you know, he's just gone to another place. But like my experiences with him, I didn't imagine it. It's very real, and it's okay to acknowledge that I miss that. I miss that relationship.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And because we won't ever forget, you know, that, because like you'd mentioned, Well, I don't want you to remember, or I don't want to remind you.
Right.
We ain't never going to forget.
Yeah, you don't need to remind, like, you are going to remember. You are dwelling on it. Yeah.
Exactly. It's the first thing on your mind when you wake up and the last mm-hmm. thing before you go to bed. You don't forget. And so, yes, just those memories of knowing those thoughts that he was loved. You know, even mm-hmm. when we go to the cemetery is really just around the corner from our home. We live in a small community. And you see fresh footprints in the snow, and you know someone's been there.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, and I know he was loved. I mean, his funeral was ridiculous. The amount of people and, mm-hmm. you know, he was a firefighter, like I had mentioned. So that's a different whole, the fire family's just, we like gained an entirely new family as well. It's just been a blessing. But just to know that people still think about him and that he's still very much, like I said, he lived big. And to know that people saw that and still remember him is huge.
Oh, that's good. Thank you for sharing so candidly with us. And I really appreciate that, your willingness to do that. So we're gonna move ahead. Okay. Let's talk about homemaking tasks. And I have some questions for you that the quick answer, or you can tell me a story if you want. It's up to you. So I'd love to know, what do you feel like is your worst homemaking fail, or one of them?
Yes. I actually asked my husband about this because I'm like, what do you think it's been? Because there are a few, like letting your laundry pile up. So our first home was, we finished all the hardwood floors. And I went through and was trying to sweep up, and I couldn't get the sanding grit off the floor. And so I'm like, well, shoot, maybe I can just mop it up. No, you cannot just mop up grit and stuff off, steel wool off the floor. It opened the pores of all the wood, the floor and the wood.
No.
And all of those little grits went into that and stayed there for the entire time. Like, they never went away. Never. So that was probably my biggest homemaking DIY fail. I had no idea. I was like 23. I just thought I'd mop it up.
So you just had like permanently rough wood floors.
Well, they were smooth, but they were embedded with all the little steel wool particles the sand part. Yeah.
So they were like very distressed looking.
Oh, most definitely. Which was not in style back then.
No.
Not in style back then.
Okay. How about a memorable homemaking achievement?
I asked about that one. I asked my kids. You know, it's so funny. But I have to admit that I think just being a parent is part of being homemaking. And I think my kids honestly have been my achievement. Mm-hmm. I am blessed. But I'm really not a good homemaker. I still to this day fight it every day to try and make sure it looks good and things are going well.
So how about your favorite homemaking hack or tip that you've come across over the years?
Meal planning.
Mm-hmm.
Meal planning. I cannot stress meal planning. Whether it's two people with, you know, you're just married or you've got 9 kids, 12 mm-hmm. kids, meal planning is where it's at.
Yeah, especially big family meal planning. Would you normally plan by the week or 2 weeks or a month, or how did you typically?
So I normally plan by the week.
Okay.
I would love to get to the month, but yeah. I just can't think that far ahead.
Me neither.
Yeah. But yeah, I plan by the week.
Okay.
And it helps with your grocery budget.
Sure.
It helps with, and the way I meal plan, I don't, you know, I do a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I don't do Sundays because a lot of times we just go out to eat after church. But you can change it around. Just, I may not wake up and feel like having hamburgers or whatever was on the menu, or, you know, and I'll just pick something from that other, from the week. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. I do that all the time. Yeah. I mean, because sometimes our schedule might change in the middle of the week. And if I planned a particular meal, like on Thursday, that now we have an appointment or something, and I know that I'm not going to have time, I'll just shift things around. I'll try to still make it. I'll just maybe move it over to Saturday instead and just flip-flop the meals. Big fan of meal planning. Okay, how about a homemaking tool or product that you love that you can't live without?
My spot cleaner. My little vacuum Bissell spot cleaner.
Oh,
we only... with as many kids,
dogs.
Chickens, you name it, spot cleaner. I'd have to say that, or my Bissell, you know, it's the dual where it vacuums and sucks and mops mm-hmm. all at the one time. Those two, I can't, I just could not live without those.
Yeah. Is it the spot cleaner? Is it like the little Bissell green, like the...
Yes, like a little green
one with the little wand that you, yeah.
Yes, yeah. No, I did, that one did die. So I recently, matter of fact, like maybe 6 months ago, mm-hmm. Purchased the pet version and it's all in one.
Oh,
it's just one big, it's not big, but it, I mean, it is, but it's like a, remember the old Dustbuster?
Yes.
So it's a little bigger than that, but it's just one piece.
Okay.
So that's cool. Nice. Yeah.
Oh, that is nice. That's a good size. Tell me what your signature dish is.
Let's see. I love to cook, generally speaking, mm-hmm. But I would have to say my tortilla soup.
Oh, I love a good tortilla soup.
Yeah. And mine is a little, like some people think of tortilla soup and they think of with all the veggies. Yeah, no, we don't have all the veggies in mine. Okay. So it is basically a cheesy broth type, a thicker mm-hmm. cheesy creamy broth and chicken. Mm. And then I fry up tortilla strips and deep fry those and top it with cheese. And yeah, that's Yum. My favorite.
It's a cheesy broth. Does it have any tomatoes in it at all?
Yeah. Well, yes. It has like a rotel. Like, I guess so. Yeah. The vegetable. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I forgot about the rotel. But
well, but some people, I have had it in some restaurants where there's like squash and all kinds of weird
corn
stuff
and beans. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, no.
That sounds fabulous. I would love to get a copy of that if you're willing to share.
Absolutely.
Okay. I'll be in touch about that. All right. Well, thanks for sharing all those tips and everything. Let's talk a little bit about the art of home before we close, and then we'll talk to the younger women as well. How do you see homemaking as an art, and where do you find beauty in homemaking?
Oh, wow. I used to see it as a chore. So I never really saw the art in it. And I think... I still struggle, and that is one of the things that to this day, I just did not have the thought process that I've recently taken to within the last probably, I would even say 5 or 6 years, of understanding that the beauty in it is that you're serving your family, that it is your most important ministry, is your family, and the beauty in seeing them happy, like when the house gets overwhelmed, because my house is not perfect ever. and them walking in and saying, oh, wow, this looks really nice in here, you know, and the smile and them being able to be comfortable or watching the little one, because I finally got all the toys picked up off their floor, spinning in circles and dancing. That's where I find the beauty mm-hmm. In it.
Mm, I love that. What is something about homemaking that you're thankful for?
I am so thankful that I started homemaking in the 90s. late 90s, but
pre-Instagram, is that what you're getting at?
Oh, amen, sister, because I fall to it even to this day. I'm like, oh, look at that kitchen.
You know,
I just would not want to compare, you know, like some of these young moms and young house homemakers. And I just, my heart breaks for them because it, like I said, my house is not perfect. It's a home. We live here. Yeah. Would I love it to look Instagram perfect? Absolutely. But that's not reality.
No, it's not. It's not. It's not real. There's actually a movement I've seen on some of the posts that come through on my Instagram feed. You know, let's normalize normal houses.
Yes,
with like
absolutely,
you know, 1990s brown cabinets and stuff like that.
That's my house. Yeah, I've got green countertops. Although I will say we are planning a remodel, but I don't know when that'll happen.
Yeah, I mean, there's space for that. Aesthetics are they're important, but they're not the most important thing. And I agree with you. I'm just so glad I didn't have that comparison constantly, you know, in my face when I was just learning and I needed to be focusing on learning how I needed to do things. Now, there has some benefit, right? YouTube University and all the things you can learn. You know, the way that I had to learn was I would go to the library. And I would check out books. And then eventually, I don't remember when HTV started. HGTV, was that like late 90s?
It had to early 2000s.
Yeah. And boy, when I got HGTV, I was like, oh my, this is like opening up a whole new world to me.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Same. I would sit there and watch and be like, wow.
Oh, I didn't know I could do that, you know, with fabric or whatever. You would learn all these cool tips and tricks. Anyway, so we are all appointed to the time, you know, where God has put us. And I'm glad I learned in the 90s also how to be a homemaker. Okay, well, let's talk to some of those younger women. What is a word of advice or encouragement or warning that you would give to younger homemakers coming behind you?
Yeah, I like to stress that it is a ministry. You know, truly is one of the most important ministries I think there is, especially when you have children in your home. We are not, you know, yeah, we're taking care of our home, but we're also raising, we're raising adults. You know, a lot of people say we're raising children. No, you're raising adults. That is the prayer that they do make it to adulthood. And so some of the things that I like to look at is, you know, for instance, Proverbs 14:1, where it says the wise woman builds her home. You know, the scripture and the word tells us that that's, it's okay to do that. That is a why. That's, you know, we're, yes, you're cleaning, but you're building your home. And a home to me is so much more different, is not a house. It could be your little one bedroom studio apartment or something, but you're building a home. And also, you know, we all like to, a lot of us women in women's ministry, especially Proverbs 31, you know, there are so many things to be seen there where it does talk to us about, you're eager and you're diligent in your homemaking, because that is such a huge part of life. You know, home is where you get to rest. Home is where, you know, you get to fix all the boo-boos, you know, for your children. Home is where you see first steps, where hopefully, you know, if you might see them in a park, but you know what I mean? Home is home. I don't know how else to explain it other than it's where, you know, it is, it's just so important. And to see the beauty in being able to be home and, or be a homemaker, no matter what, whether I have so much respect for people who work outside of the home and then come home and make and are homemakers. I can't do it myself, but there's just so much to being home and having a home. You think, I know I'm probably going to ramble, but you know, you think about kids going off to college and coming back home where they feel warmth and comfort and love and safe and secure. You know, I think of the day coming when my big kids will bring home their my grandbabies someday, you know, to home. I just, it's so important. I'm sorry. It's just, I could just go on and on, but it's so important.
Yeah. It's good. Thank you for sharing those thoughts. And thank you for sharing your story of home. It has been a delight to hear it and to get to know you better.
Thanks. I know it's not perfect, but I don't think anyone is. So
no, they're not. All right. Well, thanks so much, Leanne.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this homemaker portrait of Leanne Stadler. I hope you have found some inspiration and some encouragement and something that you can implement right now in your own homemaking. I am very grateful to Leanne for candidly sharing her journey of grieving the loss of her son, how that affected her homemaking, and how God has shown himself faithful over and over again. If you know someone who is dealing with loss, I hope Leanne's encouragement to minister to them with regular check-ins and a willingness to remember that loved one with your friend will help you minister to them. Our home has not yet been touched with the grief of death, but we have faced other kinds of loss and grief, and I can attest God has been faithful through every valley, and our home has been the sweetest refuge in these dark places because he holds the hearts of those who dwell here. I'd like to close today with a passage from chapter 7 of J.R. Miller's Homemaking, in which he closes his discussion on the home life flowing like a river through fields of sunshine and valleys of shadow. So the life of the true home flows on. Sometimes in the bright sunshine, sometimes in the deep shadow. Yet whether in sunshine or in shadow, it brings blessing. It shelters us in the day of storm. Its friendships remain true and loyal when adversity falls and other friendships are broken. It lays holy hands of blessing upon our heads as we go out to meet life's struggles and duties. Its sacred influences keep us from many a sin. Its memories are our richest inheritance. Its inspirations are the secret strength of our lives in days of toil and care. Then it teaches us to look toward heaven as the great home in which all our heart's hopes and dreams shall be realized, and where the broken ties of earth shall be reunited. That's all for this week's episode. I will be back next Wednesday with another homemaker portrait and the finale of season 18. Until then, keep practicing your art of making a home.